Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Daily Friend Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Sorimer. And today I am joined once again by Sarah Gohan. Sarah, how are you doing?
Well, thank you. No, good. Thanks.
And also, Gerbrand van Heerden. Harry, how are you doing?
Good. It's a cold, rainy day today in Cape Town, my favorite weather. So, yeah, very good.
And as is inevitably the case in when the Western Cape gets cold, Gauteng is only a few days behind. So I would once again like to thank the Western Cape for sending us their freezing weather. But I also just want to warn everyone, my internet's still not fixed. I'm on a bit of a mobile connection. I apologize if there's any drops. Let's get us started with a word from our sponsor, which is once again Bitvice. And Bitvice says, if you're concerned about the poor performance of the South African rand and local investment returns when planning for your retirement, look no further than bitvice.io, the reputable white glove Bitcoin service designed to provide you with a secure and professional approach to navigating the world of Bitcoin. With a proven track record, Bitcoin offers potential growth opportunities amidst economic uncertainties. At bitvice.io, we prioritize your security and empower you with self-custody, ensuring complete control and protection of your Bitcoin holdings. Discover the benefits of self-custody and secure your financial future with bitvice.io and visit their website today. There will be a link to them in the description. Let's get started with the news of today. And this is a bit of polling published in the media from the Democratic Alliance, the DA. Now, I just want to firstly say that I'm actually very pleased to see more polling out in the papers these years, in recent years. I think South Africa has been pretty weak when it comes to election polling. The political parties have done election polling themselves, but it's usually kept secret and it's hidden behind closed doors. And we didn't even get the sort of strategic leaking of polling data or the strategic release of polling data like often happens in the United States or in Britain or countries like that. However, with our elections getting more competitive at the national level, we're beginning to see political parties dumping polling data into the media to try and shape the narrative. And we've got a great example here, and this is always very useful to political junkies, because these polls, while they may be selectively chosen in the sense that, and I'll go into that in a second, they're still based on reality. They're still based on a representative sample. They're still based on actual research that was done by the political organizations. So we've seen leaks now from the ANC. We've seen published polls that were commissioned by the EFF. And now we've got one from the DA, which was put in, I think, Business Live. And they only released information on two of South Africa's provinces, Gauteng and KwaZulu-Natal. Now, I'm going to read off the voter turnout model, which is, so whenever you do a poll, you have to kind of you can adjust them a little bit to try and work out who's actually going to show up to the polls. Because people who answer your survey, a lot of them are going to say things like, I'm not going to vote. And those people aren't really that useful for the entire, you know, for what the polling actually says. But there can be a little bit of disagreement of exactly how to model the voter turnout, which is why these things can kind of differ depending on the polling people involved. So in raw numbers, the DA is actually much lower in Gauteng than it is in their voter turnout model. But nevertheless, assuming a voter turnout of 66%, according to this DA poll, they claim to now be polling as the biggest party in Gauteng. The DA claims it's going to win, if the election were held today, around 37% of the votes in Gauteng. The ANC, 34%. The EFF, 11. The IFP, 1. The Freedom Front Plus, 3. The ACDP, 1. Action SA, 6. The Patriotic Alliance, 1. And some of these other small parties around about 5% of the vote. So let's start off with our discussion of Gauteng. Sarah, let me start with you. Firstly, do you think that these numbers are plausible? Do you think that the ANC is looking basically to get absolutely clubbed in Gauteng if the election were held right now? What do you make of it?
I think this might be the year that this next year that it is possible, because the last time we had said elections, the DA was mired in the controversy with Muzi Maimane, and it did you know, it did affect it, and it certainly affected it at level where we expected possibly that the DA would be more successful. But given given the stability and you know all the other factors that we've talked about at length, I think we've seen other polls that have looked at figures as low as 34% for the ANC. So this is not a sort of the DA is thumping its chest and you know saying you know we're gonna you know these guys are just great they're way but it's actually it's not been entirely uncommon to measure them at this level, particularly in Gauteng, as opposed to on the national level. Gauteng's being the sort of economic engine, and it being different to, other than the Western Cape, but essentially being different to the other provinces, in terms of sophistication and awareness of the need to vote, et cetera. I think it should be taken seriously.
Kerry, what do you make of this? I think Sarah is correct to say that the DA was in some ways in a more fractious state back in 2019. It had isolated all of its sort of core voters without actually attracting that many new ones. And it performed, especially in Gauteng, disappointingly. It only got about 27% of the vote in the provincial elections there. This poll suggests that they would get 10% more than that, and the ANC would suffer a horrific drop going all the way from 50% to kind of 34%, with the EFF staying about the same place, maybe slightly below where it was in 2019. What do you make of this? I mean, this would suggest that the ANC is in serious trouble with particularly township, urban, black voters, and people who live in the suburbs.
I think the one difference that we have now that may count in the DA's favor compared to 2019 is load shedding wasn't permanent. It's happening now every day, at least for 4 hours if you're lucky. 8 hours or even more if you're unlucky. So I think with load shedding affecting everything from service delivery, cost of living, I think things have become so dire that this is going to deal a tremendous blow for the ANC, especially in urban provinces such as Gauteng. Now, we've seen over the last few years that the ANC has gradually become a more rural-based party. Their support have completely collapsed in the Western Cape, Gauteng, and a little bit in KwaZulu-Natal with the IFP's help. And I think the ANC, you know, is very well aware of this fact. That's why in the last few years they've been, you know, spouting out populist rhetoric, you know, talking about making transformation policies more stricter, land reform, radical land reform policies. So the ANC is definitely in serious trouble in Gauteng. I think the main question is not whether the ANC will get above 50% in Gauteng, but rather what kind of coalition will we sit with in those urban provinces. So yeah, Gauteng is one to watch.
Right. Even if this actually ends up being something close to the election result, it's still going to be a bit of a messy coalition, right? You can see the ANC plus the EFF, that's about 44%. And then there's all these smaller parties like the PA and parties probably that we've never really heard of before, which then will hold the balance of power. And same for the DA, even if they get 37%, you put them together with Action SA, that's 43. With the Freedom Front Plus, that's another 3%. And the IFP, that's still less than 50%. And so you'd have to cobble together a whole bunch of tiny parties, which means that if you want to get a look at what Gauteng's provincial governance might look like, look perhaps no further than maybe Ekurhuleni or Tshwane or Joburg. because that does look what these election results suggest, and they might be in the short term. Now let's talk about KZN. These polls also came out there, and once again, a dramatic drop for the ANC. So in 2019, the ANC got about 54% in KZN. If this polling is in fact correct, that will drop all the way down to 37%, which is a big fall. The DA claims that it will go from 14% up to about 20% in KZN, which would be very good growth for them. They did actually grow in KZN in 2019, which was one of their better performing provinces. That is also where John Steenhuisen's from, so it's probably where he's most comfortable campaigning. The EFF would see a lot more growth in KZN, according to this poll, going from about 10% of the vote to 15%. But of course, the biggest winner would be the IFP, going from 16% in the last election to, if this poll is correct, 23% in KZN. That's still, once again, a really messy coalition dynamic. You put the ANC and EFF together, you've got, what's that, just over 50%, but that's still, you know, we've seen how ANC-EFF coalitions can be a bit fractious. But it'll actually give the IFP and the DA a real shot at taking provincial government. Tara, once again, your thoughts on how things are going in KZN? Looks like this is more evidence that the IFP's fortunes truly are reviving across the province.
Yeah, and I mean, given the extent to which the IFP's presence was decimated during the People's War era and up to the first election, it's sort of probably reverting back to normal. And the only thing is, I think the IFP is going to struggle to increase its presence in Gauteng, and it used to be quite a substantial presence because of the spread of people working here who are IFP. I am disappointed that the EFF shows anything above 10%, but I suppose the advantage of having them is if any coalition does not include them, it doesn't matter what they got. And I also noticed that you just pick up also that the Action SA is not specifically listed for KZN, which confirms the fact that ASA is really a Gauteng-based party. And
that definitely seems to be the case. 6% in Gauteng would be a pretty good result for them. I think that's definitely a couple of members of the provincial legislature, and that would give them a solid place in any coalition government in Gauteng. Still, though, it must be said, the IFP is not anywhere close to its height in KZN. It once dominated the province, winning, I think, 50% of the vote, basically. And now, even in this poll, which is a very good poll for it's only 23%.
But if you think, I mean, one of the things Jacob Zuma did really successfully for the ANC was to change the voting patterns for the ANC. Whatever methods he used, you know, God only knows, but the ANC was absolutely dominant. It was the majority party in the KZN. So I think between the failure of the ANC, the fact that the Itikwini and other places have just rotted, and under the ANC, the amount of political assassination that's gone on in Natal, I think that has significantly improved IFP's fortunes, and I think will continue to do so. It will creep up. Of course, the next test would be local elections in, I don't know, what's it, 2 years' time or 3 years' time. But it's definitely a sign of things changing. The very fact that the DA is up, the IFP is up, even the EFF is up, is all indication that the ANC is losing its grip.
I think some of what this does represent is the fact that KZN is not the same province it was in 94. Mm. So 94, 99, the IFP is doing very well, you know, over 50%, over 40% in the provincial elections back then. But KZN was also a much more rural place. Mm. And now, even though the IFP has made some inroads into the townships around places like Durban, it's still mostly winning from rural voters. And the reality is, there's just not as many rural voters as there used to be in South Africa, which is also a problem for the ANC.
Yeah. Can I just mention that when people sort of discuss this in distress with me, I point out the fact that we've got to bear in mind that South Africa, and particularly these provinces, are more urban than they are rural. So that positioning has switched. And of course, with people living in urban areas, they're still having strong connections back to rural areas, may have an influence on family in rural areas based on the experience of people who work in the cities. So that's changed enormously, and I think I agree with you. Don't underestimate that.
Kerry, what's your take on these polling results for KZN?
Yeah, I think the only thing that I'll add to that is, as I mentioned earlier, the ANC is becoming more rural based, and so in order to attract more of those rural voters, you dangle the welfare, the social grants in front of people, so to help them to get through the month. And KwaZulu-Natal has been a province that has had a huge dependency on social grants, much more so than an urban province such as Gauteng with a big black middle class. But I think what Sarah said is very true in the sense that, eThekwini and many other municipalities in KwaZulu-Natal are rotting under the ANC. I mean, there's this joke about when Gautengers are now going to KwaZulu-Natal for holiday, they go from eGoli to eKoli. And because the water is just full of, the ocean is just full of sewage there. So I think the IFP is capitalizing quite well on the ANC's failure. And there's definitely a good chance for the IFP and the DA to take most of KZN from take most of KZN from the ANC.
We've also seen, of course, probably the most effective example of coalition cooperation against the ANC in KZN, where in various by-elections and things, the DA hasn't put up candidates and has actually kind of campaigned for the IFP. And that's seen the IFP take awards that it's never won from the ANC before. That seems to be really working out in those two parties' favor. They did back in 2006 form a coalition, although that didn't work very well. But it seems like the DA and IFP coalition version 2.0 is a much more successful one than the previous one. Just on that urbanization point, I just went to double check the data now because I couldn't remember the exact numbers. And according to Stats SA, something like just under 70%, just over two-thirds of South Africans actually live in what they classify as an urban area. And that's up from 2011, where it was already at 62%. So if you're the ANC and you're relying more and more on these rural voters to keep your support base up, it's not a great place to be in, because that is a shrinking portion of the population every single year. Any final thoughts from either of you?
I had one.
Sorry, you go first.
Okay. No, I was just going to say, that, it won't necessarily have a massive impact, but probably the only shining light of municipalities, which is all we can judge at the moment, is Mngeni. I mean, the DA has done extraordinarily well in dragging that municipality up from the depths of hell. So that should have some effect. I don't say massive, but it's not a problem for the DA, let's put it this way.
Just before you make your point, Harry, I noticed that Robert made a very interesting observation in the comments here, and I think this is really worth pointing out. The ANC actually originally in 94 was not a party of the rural areas. It did not have a lot of support in rural South Africa. It had, a fair amount, but there were a lot of regional parties that actually took support from the ANC in those areas. And that it relied on urban people in the townships and on the edge pretty much for its support base. And that seems to have completely changed, which is a fascinating development that tells you that as much as things seem kind of the same on the surface of South African politics, there's a lot of churn underneath. Kerry, your final thoughts.
I'll just quickly say that the ANC is on the wrong side of three very important trends that has taken over South Africa. The first one is urbanization, which we've now discussed. The second one is the youth. Young people are much less likely to vote for the ANC than older people. And then thirdly is the middle class. South Africans, you know, have gotten richer, even though the economy is stagnating and we're seeing poverty rising again. But overall, urbanization, a youthful population, and a richer population, the ANC is on the wrong side of all three of those trends that have become more prominent in the country. So that's a big problem for them.
Exactly. And that is one of the reasons of which I think it's reasonable to take these polls seriously as showing some of these shifts here, which is that we've seen these long-term trends and they do suggest that there is a fundamental change that might be lurking in our politics. Anyway, so we spent a long time on that one. Let's quickly talk about our next topic. And this is that there were some inflation numbers. I think they came out yesterday. We've seen a little bit of a downward trend with inflation, consumer price inflation dropping from, I think it was 7.1% in March to 6.8% in April. So a little bit of a drop. That's a bit of a stabilization. It does seem now as though the trend in inflation seems to be going downwards. It's not entirely a good thing, though, in the sense that there are still some things that where there looks like there's a lot of inflation, and particularly that seems to be food inflation. Which is very high at about 14% year on year. So compared, food prices are on average 14% higher than they were in April 2022, which is, and honestly, I'm pretty sure that almost all of us living here know that already. The cost on South Africans, I think, has been very noticeable. I've certainly felt it. Kerry, what's your take on this? Are we going to see the slowing down of inflation in a general way? Will food inflation come down? And what can government do about it?
Well, the thing is that, you know, food inflation is still, you know, even though it's come down a little bit, it's still very high. And a lot of people may think that it's a particular problem that only affects the working class or poor South Africans. But we're also starting to see trends of more wealthier households, middle-class households, struggling with something such as food inflation. And that's because South Africa's middle class is highly in debt. A large share of debt from wealthier households are asset-based, so vehicle loans, home loans, and as interest rates increase and you have to pay more for these assets in your repayment, you're going to have less money available to pay for things such as food items. And there's also a study that has shown that things have gotten so worse that many South Africans are now sacrificing food in order to buy other types of utilities such as electricity. So I think South African households are curbing expenditure on very important items such as food to cover increases in all other parts of society. So it's really trying to plug all these different holes of the dam that's just breaking and becoming larger. Yeah.
Sara, feeding into our previous story, inflation, particularly on sort of important consumer goods, it's usually not a great thing for whoever's in power, regardless of whether it's their fault or not. What's your take on this?
Yeah, no, I mean, in a way, as a sort of ordinary citizen type person, food inflation, nothing else that matters as much as food inflation. And as you say, you know, just one's own experience in seeing prices rise is just is extraordinary. So it's got to have an impact, because you can, what it means, of course, is that your 350 Rand SASSA grant will cover less, and considerably less. So you really are on the bones of your bum. And that, you know, that's the problem with the food inflation thing, is that is an element of inflation that does affect everyone. Not everyone has home loans, not everyone buys cars, et cetera, et cetera. But food, you know, it's literally like going back to the Stone Ages. That is the thing. Everything else, you know, comes by the wayside, even the electricity. But of course, the electricity has an impact on the considerable food inflation. So let's put it this way. I agree with you. And I think if good luck to the ANC. I wish them not well. And this is significantly one of the reasons why.
Kerry, any final thoughts before we move on?
No, just to touch on what Sara said. You know, the Eskom tariff hikes and just the general. The fact that electricity is going to become more unaffordable for many manufacturers and many retailers, you know, they're going to be forced to, you know, push those expenses onto consumers. And so that's just going to, life is just going to continue to be expensive for a very long time for South Africans until we can sort out, you know, the issues in governance and with Eskom.
Just a reminder to everyone on our last story that I completely forgot to mention the campaign that Alex, who works with us, is running, and that is the Pledge to Vote campaign, pledgetovote.co.za. You can check out the that website and sign up. It's got some great stuff there talking about why voting is important, and it also, I think, has some vouchers and things you can win if you do in fact pledge to vote, and it'll send you reminders when voting day is getting close, that you can make sure that you get to the polls on time to make a difference. All right, we don't have a lot of time for our last story, but I do just want to briefly mention it because it's something that tends to get up my nose, and this is that it is, I think, either today or yesterday, 60 years since the establishment of the Organization for African Unity, which today is known as the African Union. And this was the sort of brainchild of the first leader of independent Ghana, Nkrumah, and the emperor of Ethiopia, Haile Selassie. And it was based on the idea of Pan-Africanism, which is an idea that I think actually originates in Jamaica from Marcus Garvey and some other thinkers, but in many ways from him. And it has, in my opinion, been one of the most disastrous developments in African politics. And it has squandered many of the gains of independence. The AU is, shall we say, not the world's most functional organization. In many ways, it's kept alive essentially by the EU, which sees it as some sort of sister organization and that it desperately wants to kind of develop, but without much success. In my opinion, in many ways, it's been more of a club for protecting the status quo and dictators than it has been for actually integrating Africa. There have been some big developments, of course, though. There's the African Free Trade Agreement and regional integration in East Africa. There's a West African currency that's been in existence for a long time. And yet, while these things often exist on paper, in reality, they don't seem to be nearly as important as they should be towards making Africa a more prosperous place. Pan-Africanism is based off of a strange, old-fashioned, weird racial ideas that all people of one race must be in a country together. And, you know, that's clearly, we have many problems with that as the Institute of Race Relations. And as South Africans, I think we should have a problem with that, because that's not how our country is constructed. But Sara, what do you make of 60 years of the AU? I'm just very down on it. Do you agree with my assessment?
Yes.
Do you have your own thoughts?
No, the problem is it also, the Pan-Africanism, there's a problem revealed in the fact that there's so much myth-making around the freedom of the countries, the Kwame Nkrumah, those Haile Selassie was dreadful. And they all sooner or later became autocrats. And if it's a, you know, to the extent that Pan-Africanism was the sources, was part of the root of it, I think it's hindered. It did us no favors. The transition from colonialism to liberation, it's not been a great success all round.
There are some examples of African success stories in more recent years, but we've also seen some, especially in the last couple of years, some really backsliding stuff in a number of military coups that have been launched, particularly in West Africa. And if there's one thing that's not conducive to good economic growth, it's basically a military coup. It's about the worst, one of the worst things that can happen to you, because it means continued dysfunction. It's also worth noting that both Nkrumah and Haile Selassie were overthrown actually in military coups. So the legacy has not been abolished. In the 90s, there was a lot of advancement in democracy in Africa. Unfortunately, there goes my power. That seems to have been reversed somewhat in recent years, which is very disappointing. Sherry, any final thoughts on this topic just before we close up today?
I not really, just that the African Union sounds quite useless. I'm not very familiar with the topic, but yeah, basing on what you said.
Perhaps can I just end on this, that what the EU shows is that countries, you have to have a significant number of countries that are prosperous and successful for a union of this nature to have any meaning.
Right. And you have to be able to exert crack down on corruption on your borders, because it doesn't matter if you have no tariffs, if there's corrupt officials who are just going to invent their own tariffs on borders, makes all of this a bit silly. But anyway, we hope that you found the show interesting today. We will be back next week on the Daily Friend Show. And yeah, everyone, have a wonderful and successful weekend. Cheers.